Good evening. We're in the middle of number 14. We stopped in the middle last week, so I didn't prepare anything for 15. I thought we could review what we exposed ourselves to and then go on to finish it. Was anybody not here last week who didn't get a handout? Sally. Thank you. 14. And 9 you need, huh? 7, 9. Mm-hmm. So I think we read from Do you remember, Don? Ron, I mean?
It's in the bottom of the first page of it and then all the way down to the next page.
Yes.
I
can see it. Yeah. So basically, as you may remember, Subhuti was moved to tears to hear that practice wasn't about achieving nirvana, but about being with others. This last bit. If a man or woman, Buddha said, renounce their self-existence every day, this is the arhat practice. Wipe yourself out, drop the ego every day, as many times as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, and renounce their self-existence in this manner for as many kalpas as there are grains of sand in the Ganges. And someone else grasped one four-line gatha of this Dharma teaching and made it known and explained it to others, the body of merit produced as a result would be immeasurably, infinitely greater. This is what moved Subhuti to tears. It changed the whole direction of his practice. So he exclaims how remarkable it is to speak for the benefit of beings who are seeking and to try to benefit those who are looking for the path, and from which my own awareness is born. This Dharma teaching from which my own awareness is born. We read the sutras, but the awareness comes from, is born from, our own body, our own mind. So then he begins to worry about the final epoch, and maybe those people won't have the advantage of, since everything is going downhill so badly, and he says, boy, if anybody could grasp this, they're really, really lucky. He says, they won't create a perception of a self, nor shall they create a perception of a being, a perception of a life, or a perception of a soul. They shall create neither a perception nor no perception. Why not, Bhagavan? The perception of a self is no perception. And the perception of a being, a life, or a soul is also no perception. Because Buddhas and Bhagavans are free of all perceptions. And then Buddha went on to talk about how those who really understand this aren't frightened anymore. Not frightened, not distressed, not alarmed, but by what is said in this sutra. It's the best of perfections. In truth, no perfection. And then he goes on to talk about the perfection of forbearance, which is one of the paramitas. The one to withstand and be strong and brave. He talks about when he in another life was all cut to ribbons by someone and how because he didn't think of himself as a soul or a self or a being, there was neither perception nor no perception. This is something to really study. What is the mind of no perception and perception? The perception of no perception. He said, if I had had the perception of a being, life, soul, at that moment I would have had the perception of anger. For many lifetimes he went without having a perception of a self. So I think we read one more paragraph, but I think we should read the next paragraph and go on to the end. Somebody? Therefore, Subhuti, fearless bodhisattva, should get rid of all perceptions. It's page 222.
Okay.
Thank you.
Therefore, Subhuti, fearless bodhisattva, should get rid of all perceptions in giving birth to the thought of unexcelled, perfect enlightenment. They should not give birth to a thought attached to a sight, nor should they give birth to a thought attached to a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or a dharma. They should not give birth to a thought attached to a dharma, nor should they give birth to a thought attached to no dharma. They should not give birth to a thought attached to anything. And why not? Every attachment is no attachment. Thus, the Tathagata says that bodhisattvas should give gifts without being attached. They should give gifts without being attached to a sight, a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or a dharma. Should I go on?
Sure.
Moreover, Subhuti, bodhisattvas should practice charity in this manner for the benefit of all beings. And how so? Subhuti, the perception of a being is no perception. Likewise, all the beings of whom the Tathagata speaks are thus no beings. And how so? Subhuti, what the Tathagata says is real. What the Tathagata says is true, and is as he says it is, and is not other than he says as he says it is. What the Tathagata says is not false. Moreover, Subhuti, in the Dharma realized, taught, and reflected on by the Tathagata, there is nothing true and nothing false. Subhuti, imagine a person who enters a dark place and who can't see a thing. He is like a bodhisattva ruled by objects, like someone practicing charity ruled by objects. Masabuddhi, imagine a person with eyesight at the end of the night when the sun shines forth, who can see all number of things. He is like a bodhisattva, not ruled by objects, like someone practicing charity, not ruled by objects. Therefore, Subhuti, if a noble son or daughter should grasp this Dharma teaching and memorize it, recite it, master it, and explain it in detail to others, the Tathagata will know them, Subhuti, by means of his Buddha knowledge, and the Tathagata will see them, Subhuti, by means of his Buddha vision. The Tathagata will be aware of them, Subhuti, for all such beings produce and obtain an immeasurable, infinite body of merit.
There's a passage very much like this in the Lotus Sutra when the Buddha announces to not Subhuti, but one of the other bodhisattvas, that if people practice, he will be there, he will know. Red Pine said, the merit from believing, grasping, and explaining this teaching to others has no limit because it's free of concepts of self and others. That's why he brings up charity. Then in the practice of generosity, self and other disappear. The gift in the self and the other all become part of one thing, and there is no concept of self. There is no attachment. So it's not saying we're wiping out the world or we're kicking a rock like Dr. Johnson to prove that it's real. It's that if we become attached to the so-called reality of anything, that's when we're making a mistake. Our attachment, our concepts. If we keep our mind free of the concept, then we're available to the reality of what's really there. Such merit is equivalent to wisdom itself, for it illuminates the ignorance of the world. Because everybody, you and me and everybody, believes what we see and believe our story and are attached to all of it and are terribly disappointed when things don't go right and are often hurting a lot. How could the Tathagata not be aware of those responsible for the transformation of darkness into light? Also, the Tathagata is aware of them, for by means of their attainment, their future Buddhahood becomes evident to all other Buddhas, for they all share the same body. Wang Po says, ordinary people are unwilling to empty their minds. They're afraid they'll fall into emptiness, unaware that their own minds are already empty. The fool gets rid of phenomena and not the mind. The wise gets rid of the mind and not phenomena. A bodhisattva's mind is like space. A bodhisattva gives away everything, outside and inside. Such great renunciation is like walking with a candle before you. You can't get lost. So there are lots of other quotes on the Diamond Sutra here that I handed out that come out of this book. But actually, I think this is really the basis. I mean, I know it is the basis. As soon as Subhuti realized real selflessness, not trying to wipe himself out anymore, but to realize that his perceptions were what were getting in the way, and that if you are attached to your perceptions, you can't see properly. So Red Pine said, instead of stressing freedom from perceptions, as Subhuti does, the Buddha stresses freedom from fear. The absence of the psychological or emotional trauma from believing a doctrine that turns out to be devoid of any doctrine, and that the Buddha calls the best of doctrines. Everyone relies on some sort of teaching, but the best of teachings taught by all Buddhas deprives those who would follow it of any teaching at all. At the same time, the Buddha's statement exposes the relative value of all teachings, including his own. This teaching first strips away the dharmas of beginning practitioners. Finally, it strips away the emptiness of arhats. Each of this is a terrifying experience. How can we not have a self? How can there not be dharmas to cultivate? What is left if emptiness is empty? Can such a teaching be taught by anyone other than a Buddha, or practiced by anyone other than a bodhisattva? So freedom of perfection is not the goal, but the means. Freedom of perception is not the goal, but the means. The goal is liberation of all beings. And only when they're free of perception of being can bodhisattvas liberate beings. Around this seeming contradiction turns his teaching. So, are there questions? There must be questions. Yes.
I know this is a really old dilemma, but how do we save beings if there are no beings to be saved?
Right, that's the dilemma. that's just what Red Pine was saying. It really is more like disabusing beings from the concept of being by dropping it in your own mind. And once you don't see beings anymore, then you free what you see. You don't see beings.
You
free them in your own mind. Yes. It's all we have to work with. Many lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, there's no end to it.
But that's really helpful to think of bringing them in my mind. rather than out there somewhere.
Yeah. There ain't no out there there. Yeah, that's a good question. Annalyn.
Still reflecting, and I think my sense of this chapter, or again, it's just probably more reflecting on it. It's not the knowledge of what we think is wise and the right thing to do, as Subhuti is, you know, the arhat is what he's been. I can so relate, and starting in this practice, I wanted to be so skillful. And Angie kept saying, drop the skillful, drop the skillful. But I want to be really skillful and save beings. And I feel like Subhuti, it's totally getting, as I was doing Kenyan today, I remember when I started doing Kenyan, and I was all wobbly. I was looking for something to focus my eyes on. I remember I loved turning the corner so I could read the titles on the book. It was really interesting in getting how much that this practice is so much of how you embody it. Looking for validation, which I'm again feeling with this chapter and perhaps what you've just shared. And back also to the weekend before last of when we were talking about Donna, and still thinking about the paramita, the generosity, again, it's going on this charity here. But you can talk about it and talk about it. It comes in so many different ways until I practice it. I practice an attitude of gratitude, or practice giving, or practice receiving through, I don't want to say makes sense because that's back in my head, but it's when I can. Resonate more with the same words, I guess. I'm always like, I miss Julian because he would be asking these really great questions right now about very.
But it's not a thought thing.
Yeah.
And we can get all caught up in the ideas of it, and it's not an idea. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Ron?
Sounds like since if I got a mixed up one is binary arithmetic.
Mixed up with what?
What is binary arithmetic?
Binary arithmetic?
Not a kind of the computer.
Sorry.
Zero equals false and one equals two. Is it, there's nothing true, there's nothing false. There's no zeros, there's no ones. But everything is true, so it's wrong. But everything is false. So this is just kind of a very roundabout way.
Yes, I see.
What could be not greater than zero?
That's the question.
So he's just saying, you know, anytime you put a value on it, you know, I think one reason I like, well, there's one of those books, anyway, a chapter, I always remember the Magna Woman Price translation. He who perceives that all characteristics are in fact no characteristics, he perceives that the target is so on. There's no characteristic. So there's really no. There's nothing separate.
Yes.
There's no zero, there's no one, there's none is the number black and the color or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's really nothing
Nothing to hold on to.
I guess that's what he's saying, you know. But then I like people. Well, but if somebody gets there, you know, they get this state of realization, the Buddha, I don't know. Wherever they are, that I kind of worry about that part.
Yeah.
Because I haven't gotten there, so I mean, that's. But yeah. So yeah, maybe this chapter is kind of a central chapter, central book for me.
Yes. Yes, you can see how it would be long-lasting and deeply troubling, actually.
You can't really put any truth value on it. But then you realize it.
Mm-hmm.
Still, you can grasp that as really grasp, but not grasp. It's there, but it's not there. I can see why people sometimes have a hard time. It's sessions.
Well, the thing to do is just throw yourself into zazen.
Yeah.
And forget about it.
Yeah.
No, you can't figure it out. And zazen, you can't make zazen tell you what it is. It's just a matter of abandoning your attachment to answers and to yourself, which is basically what it's about. You know, the great me is going to find the answer to all of this, and then you know, all will be well or something.
Get rid of the great me, and there's no problem.
Well, and then there's the serving of others. That's why Subhuti wept. Get rid of the great me isn't enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Reflecting again. I'm trying to bring words to it, so one way that I'm able to put my hand around it is the line, no fears exist.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's just so touching. Because again, it's through practice. I could never think my way out of fear.
Yes.
So,
yes. It's depending on prajna paramita. The bodhisattva depends on prajna paramita. And depending on prajna paramita means stepping off the 100-foot pole. I mean, it really means giving up trying to organize and drive your own life without realizing what's organizing and driving your own life. So it means surrender and trust.
And tasting
and
the strawberries.
Yes, tasting the strawberry while the tiger is... Yes, because death is in it also. Because we're going to die. And that's why it's so scary. We are going to die. We can't avoid it. So if we don't factor that into our practice, then we're still living in a dream.
People that we don't love and depend on.
Well, yes, absolutely. So that brings me to another subject, or the same subject in a more contemporary way. That I don't know for sure whether I'll be here next week, because the date hasn't been set yet. It will either be Wednesday or Friday. A lot of the good docs are on vacation, and she wants to get the good docs to back her up. So I'll find out a little bit later from now. But it will either be Wednesday or Friday. So I feel very confident about it. I really trust the surgeon. I bless Ellie for putting me in that world, because she really seems incredibly smart and gifted, truly gifted. So I'll be in the hospital for 3 days probably, and then I'll be in rehab for another 4 days or so while they teach me what to do and how to take care of myself. And she swears that I'll be fine, absolutely fine. She's sending somebody up to check out my house and help me put it in shape so I can deal with it. Somebody came a couple of days ago that I called and put in grab bars in the shower, so I'm already ready for most things. And it'll be fine, and it'll be brief. The biggest problem is I won't be able to drive, because it's on the right side, and that's not so good. So I'll be kind of stuck, but that's okay. I've found some neighbors who will help me, and Sophie's coming for a few days, so it'll be a kind of vacation, really. And I definitely plan to be at Sesshin, so please don't worry about that. She said that would be fine. She said don't run up and down the hill, but I didn't plan to do that anyway. So. And Doug told me, Doug came out to look at my steps to see if I could manage the steps. And he said at Chikoji they're going to get some kind of a chair so that they, if I have to, they can get me up and down the hill in a chair to the Zendo from my little room. And that's all I would need, really. So, and if I need to rest, I'll rest. There'll be two priests there, maybe three. Jane Jasper's coming, Donna Lynn is coming, and Rose is coming too. That's three. And then if Jane McDonald comes, there'll be four. So there's a whole backup system. So it should be a really wonderful session. A lot of really good sitters, and that creates a wonderful atmosphere for everybody. So I'm excited about it. It'll be a little different, but not that different.